Hello, this is Damon.
What's going on, Damon? It's Arrow Collins. How are you doing, dude?
Arrow, you are my favorite cat to talk to.
My God, you have put together some great rock here, and this is the kind of stuff that really needs to be happening as we roar into these roaring 20s.
I love that roaring 20s. I'm gonna have to borrow that from you sometime, man.
You know, you have done something with the lyrics of your song in all of these songs that really, it's almost like, is it a reflection from the mirror, or is it that you know that what we're dealing with out here on this side of the speaker?
I think it's a combination of both, to tell you the truth, and that's a great question. You know, over the last 5 or 6 years, the songs that I've been writing, I just find them a lot more, I guess, enjoyable is the right word, because I do like to kind of give my own commentary on things I observe, things that people close to me are going through, or things that all of us as a collective might be going through.
I did a big story on iHeartRadio this morning based on that people don't understand the creative minds, that we keep moving forward in a world that wants to go backwards. Do you have to deal with that as well?
So much. Absolutely, yes. And I understand the nostalgia, I think. Maybe is part of what that is, Arrow. You know, people like to connect, especially music, maybe more so than film and other art forms. But I think they like to connect music to, you know, younger days in their life or happier times in their life. You know, I just think the answer to that for me certainly is to just keep working, keep moving forward, keep making new music, keep putting out new records. And no surprise to you, my friend, you know, I got the gears turning for the next record. You know, I'd love to drop another record in early 2022 if possible. So that's part of the process for me. I definitely like moving forward.
I'm so glad that you said that, because when I'm blessed with the opportunity to talk to these book authors, I always sit there somewhere in the conversation and say, okay, we're talking about your present book right now, but I know you're not here. You're somewhere else. And then that's when they break free and say exactly what you just said.
Yeah, I think that's part of being a real artist. And it took me a long, long time to kind of arrive at that place to be totally honest with you, man. You know, way back in the 90s when I was fronting Brother Kane, I just remember feeling like I was hanging on for dear life. Things were moving so fast, and I felt a little out of my element, I think, because, you know, singing was so new for me then. Songwriting was still pretty new for me. But now I have the advantage of some age and some experience, and it's definitely done a lot for my confidence. So no question, man. I want to be moving the ball forward always.
That's so funny that you say that, because when I was in the band and stuff like that, I was that guy that was out front, and then all of a sudden I found myself in the back. And you went from the back to the front. What was that transition like for you to suddenly, oh, all eyes on you, dude?
You know what, buddy? It was way scarier than I wanted. It was way scarier than I wanted to admit to my friends, admit to my bandmates, and certainly to myself. And I wonder if things could have been a little different if I would have just sat down with the guys in my band and said, "Fellas, I need a minute to catch up." Because seriously, man, I think it was like the spring of 92, I agreed to give it a shot. Like, okay, I'll get behind the microphone as well, in addition to playing lead guitar, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, the following summer of 93, brother, we had the number one rock track in America. Wow. With Got No Shame. So to say things were moving fast is an understatement.
Speaking of great tracks, you got to talk to me about Talk Yourself Into Anything, because I love the way that you use spoken word in the opening parts of this song. I mean, you really do bring a lot of genres together in one piece of music.
Oh, brother, thank you so much, man. I have an extra special affinity for that song. That's the one song on the album that I wrote 100% by myself. I love the collaborators I worked with on the album, but Talk Yourself Into Anything came super fast. I wrote it in 15 minutes, and I did enjoy, I love that spoken word component of that opening verse. You know, man, like everyone else, Tom Petty is on my Mount Rushmore of greatest artists all time, you know, and he does some of that. He does some of that, man. And I had just read his autobiography that the great Warren Zanes wrote, and there was so much great content in there. And just some of the stories in that book influenced my songwriting on this record. So I'd have to tip my hat to Tom on that spoken word thing you're talking about.
I'm glad that you said that because, you know, a lot of people, listeners don't understand the stories that radio people go through when we meet somebody or we listen to Tom Petty for the very first time, because we, you know, the musicians are inspired, the jocks are inspired. Our jobs relied on people like Tom Petty. If it wasn't for Tom Petty, we would have been unemployed ages ago.
Totally, man. And I think what we can all agree on now is that we took him for granted a little bit.
Yep.
He's been there. He was there for so long, and the quality of his output was so extraordinary that you just assumed, oh, there's a new Tom Petty record coming. There's going to be five singles on the radio for the next, you know, for the next year. So, you know, we're all devastated that he's no longer with us, but that music will live forever, man. Writing about it for a long time.
What part of the Tom Petty journey inspired you the most? Because I loved him when he was with the Traveling Wilburys, because I got to see a different side of Tom Petty.
Yeah, man, I was a fan right from the beginning.
Right.
You know, even for all of my hard rock influences in my younger days, I'll never forget the first record coming out, and American Girl was on the radio, and a friend of mine bought the album. But it was the song Breakdown that really connected with me. And I've got some old live tapes, Arrow, of some of my early bar bands, you know, covering Van Halen and Aerosmith and AC/DC. And in the middle of the set, man, we would play Breakdown because it was just the coolest song ever. And I still feel that way about it.
Speaking of Van Halen, I'll tell you what, man. I've really jumped into the Wolf, you know, his son, Eddie Van Halen's son. And because it just seems like he's like taking on the world like you've taken on the world with music. It's like nothing's going to get in the way. We're still going to move forward.
Yeah, man. Wolfie's kind of blown my mind, and I can tell everyone else's mind, because I remember reading interviews with his dad, you know, as obviously we none of us could know that Eddie was nearing the end of his life, but I remember reading interviews with Eddie, and he's like, oh, just wait till you hear my kid's record. It's going to blow you away. And we all just thought, oh, you know, he's just being a dad.
Right.
That's what a dad is going to say. But a couple times, man, one of Wolfie's songs have come on the radio, and I don't know who it is. And I'll like, you know, click on my Sirius XM thing, or, you know, I'll Shazam it. It's like, holy mackerel, that's another one of his songs. It's just, yeah, it's really great, man.
Well, see, that's how I feel about your music and stuff as well, because, I mean, you got a song like Can't Clap Anymore, and the first thing that I'm attracted to are the lyrics, because you're speaking a street that I live on in the way that the song opens up with a conversation. No matter how much we offer love in itself, what about those people that support us? Are they really there for us?
Yeah, man. Great question again, brother. I've never had more fulfillment making a record ever in my career than I have this Battle Lessons album. Every song, there was something about the storytelling and the characters that it was just fun. You know, whether it was a real life event that I observed, or maybe it started as a real life event and then I made up some other character in the second verse. You know, there's no rules, man. You know that. There's no rules. You can do whatever you want. And that's the greatest joy, I think, about being a songwriter. So I appreciate what you just said. It's fun now that we're able to get back out and play some shows finally, and I'm getting some one-on-one feedback from some of the fans, and they'll talk about their favorite lyric or a favorite line in a song, and I'm just grateful, man, to be getting such a good reaction to this album.
I'm so jealous of you being out there with the fans, and the reason why I say that is because I read a story one time in Wolfman Jack's autobiography where he said that Elvis Presley wrote him a letter and said that he hated him because he got to be with the fans and stuff like that, where Elvis Presley had to search for his stage. That's one thing that you guys have always done. You've always been in front of people, whereas in radio, we had to imagine the listener. We could not see them. You get to see them.
Yeah, man, there's no substitute for that. there just isn't. I was really proud of my band that over the course of the last year and a half, and I think you and I talked about this last time, Arrow, we fully embraced the live stream format to be able to perform. It was good for our state of mind, and it was just good to play the songs and connect even virtually. But there is no substitute for being on a stage with the volume, the looking at the faces. If any of us were taking it for granted, brother, we never will again.
you got to tell me where this lyric came from. Suffering from your sins, now I'm suffering from you. Holy crap, dude. You know how many men and women are going to relate with that?
I remember sitting in my chair. I have one chair at my desk, and it's just where I've done all the work of the last 5 years. And, I remember writing that line, and I was trying to rhyme some words. That's usually how a seed of an idea will begin. But that just sort of fell out. I had the title Battle Lessons, and I was trying to figure out, well, what does that really mean as it would relate to regular humans, not like in some battleground, an actual fighting situation. And that was a good day. That was definitely a good day when that line presented itself. And, again, really those first five songs on the record, brother, are just loaded with moments like that. Yeah. I mean, I've been sitting on this thing. I've been living with these songs now for almost a year and a half, and I'm still enjoying listening to the record. I'll even get a chuckle myself sometimes when I revisit some of those lines and just go, yeah, that was a good one. I don't know how I'm going to top this, man. This is going to be hard work.
Isn't that pretty freaky, being a creative person, how that happens? Because when I sit down to write a book, I know that 2.5 years of my life is going to go into this book. And it's like those that pick it up are going to go, okay, here are the pages. But they don't understand the journey to bring it forward.
Yes. And this kind of connects to the question we were discussing earlier, about looking ahead and just always moving the ball. It's really essential now more than ever, Arrow, because, the music business has changed possibly more than any other entertainment form in the business. The internet has changed everything. There are no genres anymore. There are no record stores anymore for you to get influenced on what you need to buy or listen to. So I just am grateful to have even my small fan base. They are the thing, they're that entity that fuels me, because I know if I can continue to give them what they want, then they reciprocate that, brother, by giving me the opportunity to get to continue to be an artist and book shows and play shows and make records and write songs. And that's what I've loved doing my whole life, man. And I just want to get to keep doing it. That's the way to do it. You got to keep working.
One of the big things that I'm noticing in the world of fashion is that a lot of the rock bands from the past are starting to show up in T-shirts and stuff like that. And so as a broadcaster, I walk up to them. I say, what do you know about that band? What do you know? Why are you sporting their colors and their jersey? And because it's like if you're gonna promote them, know them.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, man. Rock and roll's been around for so long, and I know when I first myself observed those shirts that you're talking about, or a hat, and I could tell by the age of the person, I'm like, man, they have no idea. There's no way that they know what Highway to Hell by AC/DC is. There's no way. They just think Angus looks cool, holding that devil's tail and with the devil horns. So I think I've kind of lightened up a little on that, man. Just any and everything that can happen to keep rock music in front of people, to me, is positive.
Well, one of the things that you've been so dynamic with is the fact that you allow listeners and people who experience your music to digest it before you start throwing vocals into place. Because you hear that a lot with Brace for Impact, because you allow me to get into that song, get into the little guitar solo in there, and then it's almost like I take a breath and I go, okay, now you can start telling me the story.
Brother, you're knocking it out of the park today, man. Listen, thank you for that. I definitely treat the guitars. I want to always treat the guitars as they are part of the story. I'm never going to be that guy that's doing just, you know, self-absorbed, just shredding and like, let me dazzle you with my technique. There still needs to be a melody, a musical statement, always, always. And to me, the intro to any rock and roll song, man, is as important as the hook, the lyric, you know, the thing. Obviously, you want the crowd, if possible, to be singing the lyrics back to you. Right. But, man, I also get off just as much on playing that opening riff and also seeing people relate to that. Like, oh, this is that song. This is my favorite song on the record. I love this riff. So, Brace for Impact was one of those. Can't Clap Any Louder was one of those. Definitely.
Well, because you know that we're out there in that parking lot 3 and 4 hours before we see you guys live on stage. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a club or if it's some sort of live venue. I mean, and we were out there jamming to your music, and then all of a sudden when we come in there and we experience the song live, my God, I mean, that's a relationship.
Yeah, man, I remember what that was like when I was going to shows all the time. And it's that kind of gets tattooed on your, just on your memory and on just your essence, man. I mean, I've been, you know, brother, it's like when I played in front of an audience for the first time. It was my junior high school talent show. And we tore the roof off the place. And I'm sure we were terrible, but it wasn't even about that. The kids were just blown away to see their friends on stage with guitars and drums and actually doing it. And I'll never forget that feeling as long as I live. And to tell you the truth, man, I've been chasing that same feel. Like, whatever that was, I want to feel that as much as possible. It was like a drug. I'll never stop chasing it.
I still have a cassette tape of my band in 1979 at Rose Park in Billings, Montana. And we sucked so bad, but I will not throw that tape away.
Oh, that's so great, man. What a great story. I wish I had a tape of that show, but maybe it's better that I don't. You know, maybe the memory is better in my mind.
Now, talk to me about the album cover, because there's a lot of perspective here. As somebody who studied architecture and drafting and stuff like that, there's a lot of symbolism going on here.
Yeah, man. Credit to my very, very talented brother-in-law, my wife's brother, Carl. He came up with that. It was an image that he had with a collection of stuff that I was just kind of looking through one day. I wasn't even looking for an album cover. I was enjoying some of his work, and that image jumped out at me. It looked to me like some type of a force. If you look at it, you know, like reading a page from left to right, the force enters some place, it enters some energy, it enters into some monolith. And then an event happens and it explodes and then it bursts out the other side. I just felt like that was a great representation of these songs. Yeah. I felt like, man, what a great image to go along with Casual Beast, Let the Healing Begin, Lightning Bolt. It just felt like those songs to me. I'm glad you dig that.
I could totally see that being turned into some sort of a painting on the wall, or just some sort of, you know, we get the print, we frame it, because I mean my God, everybody is doing that. That's one of those that you need to be doing that as well.
Oh, trust me, there's already one hanging on our wall. And you know, listen, man, I'm still waiting, as crazy as this sounds. We're still waiting on the vinyl to get delivered, Arrow. I don't know if some of your other artists have talked about the complete dumpster fire that vinyl manufacturing has become this year. Everything has been delayed for just about everyone, unless you're the Foo Fighters or Jack White or some giant artist like that, man. You know, I think during the pandemic, since bands couldn't tour, they all said, well, let's release our whole catalog on vinyl. Yeah. And, you know, if you're in Fleetwood Mac, you're going to get priority over the little guys like Damon Johnson. So we're waiting, man. But as soon as we get that vinyl, I promise you, man, I'm going to be framing that cover and putting it on my wall, man. I can't wait.
A year ago at this time, Don McLean's song, you know, American Pie, really took on a new image, you know, the day the music died. Well, here in 2021, you are proving that, no, the music did not face that day where the music died, because you've got this collection of music, and you're proving that we're still rocking.
What a great analogy, brother. Yeah, you know, we're still kind of, I feel like in a way we're so thrilled and so grateful and so happy to finally get to be playing. We're a little gun shy. It's like, oh no, man, how do we know this is going to keep going? What if this virus returns? And, you know, I tell you, man, me and my family, we're still wearing masks to restaurants and whatever we can do to keep the healthy energy going, man, because I hope that the entire world can get back to normal very, very soon. And we're lucky, you know, to live here in the USA, because, you know, clearly we're one of the first countries to get back to some normalcy. So it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, you're so right about that, because, I mean, I've learned about this new variant and stuff like that that's supposed to be stronger than anything else, and it's like, I can't. I'm having such a hard time dealing with these different variants. It's almost like it wants to kick our ass and make sure that we take note here.
Yeah, man. And in the spirit of that, that's why we're, you know, we just want to keep doing whatever we can to keep everyone else healthy. We announced a big news for us, Arrow. We're going to go over to the UK in November. Nice. And support our buddies in Buck Cherry.
Oh.
And, you know, if that tour was next month, I don't think we'd be able to go, because they're not there yet. They're not at the place that we are here in the States. Yeah. So fingers and toes crossed, brother, that everything keeps moving forward and we can go over there in November.
All right, a page from your legacy history. What was it like when you stepped out on that stage after COVID-19, when you got to play your first show? What went through your heart? Because I'm going to tell you, I went out there and I cried, because I couldn't believe, first of all, that many people gathered, and number two, I couldn't believe that they reacted to the music.
You know, man, I was just giddy. I was so happy. The guys in my band were so thrilled. And the audience, man, the looks on their faces, you know, everybody got on their feet and the smiles and the, you know, people are waving. Listen, man, that first show that we played was actually the first week that this particular venue in Nashville, the Basement East, it's the first week they had been open. And we were the first rock and roll band to play in there. So, you know, the bar backs, the bartenders, the waitresses, everybody was just like fist in the air, big smiles. It was joyful, man. It was just, it felt like Christmas morning. That's literally what it felt like.
I was going to ask you about that smile. Is it one of those where in the corner of your eye, you kind of look over there at everybody else in the band going, God dang it, here we are.
100%, yes. You can't say it better than that, man.
So where can people go to give you guys some love? Because I know you've got merchandise. I know, and we need to promote this album. We need to get, you know, some sales going on and stuff like that. Where can they go?
Thank you so much, Arrow. It's very easy. DamonJohnson.com. Everything is right there. And as soon as you click on the page, all the social media, you know, accounts are up there at the top, the Instagram, the Facebook, the Twitter. We've been super present on all of those, and there's more and more shows starting to roll out. We've got a really cool live thing we're getting ready to put up on Spotify and Apple Music. As much of a treat for us as it is for the fans. So there's a lot of good stuff happening, but for sure, go to DamonJohnson.com.
All right, when you come to the Carolinas, we got to go out and have dinner. You got to promise me that.
Arrow, you have my word. I look forward to that, my friend.
Excellent.
I absolutely do.
Excellent.
Count on it.
You be brilliant today, okay, sir?
All right, brother, you as well. All the best to you and your family.